Are you truly committed to feeling better? I mean, absolutely feeling your best. What's the key? Eat well, sleep well, lots of hydration through water, and also your daily innovative wellness athletic supplement packs. These packets are created to supplement your daily lifestyle, allowing your body to have the nutrients it needs to run efficiently. These packets include multi-omega fish oil, D3K2 5000, probiotic, and magnesium. It's nearly impossible to get all the nutrients our body requires to run efficiently on a regular basis from our food alone. Taking this daily packet will leave you feeling more energetic and more vibrant. Your brain body will be able to detoxify more efficiently, which naturally reduces inflammation. Find out today, innovativewellness.center, innovativewellness.center, and use the code SPORTS Overnight America.
It's We'll See About That with World Series MVP Ron Say.
Okay, hello everyone, and welcome to We'll See About That. Ron Say here with Mike Carey, and as the year winds down, baseball took another hit, losing one of its greatest players of all time in Ricky Henderson, the all-time base-stealing leader, 1,400 and some bases stolen. I believe that along with my guy who passed away this year, Willie Mays, that Ricky Henderson is a top 10 all-time performer in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, George Will, who's a crotchety old baseball pundit, he says that he deserves, if any make any team top 10 team, you know, he would be on that team.
Well, you know, when you look at his statistics for his career.
Let me just go through it. 280 batting average, 3,000 hits, 3,055 hits, 297 home runs, 1,115 runs batted in, and as you mentioned, 1,406 stolen bases and 2,295 runs scored.
Yes, and he also had 2,000 walks, which is ridiculous.
Wow.
Yeah. And I did not know until I saw the complete breakdown. I actually had more home runs than and runs batted in than Ricky Henderson, but I had about 1,400 and some less stolen bases as well. But, you know, you look at this guy's career, you look at his lifetime war, my son feels like he might be even a top five. But, yeah, two unbelievably great players in Major League history passed away, and thank you so much for your contributions. Man, you made a lot of fans out of a lot of us.
Absolutely, and I really recommend reading a magazine piece written several years ago by David Gron, a noted author on Ricky Henderson, as Ricky Henderson was still trying to get back into the major leagues at age 48. The Ricky Henderson loved the game so much, everything about the game was personal to him. And he still, even after he left the big leagues, still wanted to get back and retire as a Yankee.
Yeah, well, you know, he played for 12 different teams. And I can still remember the day that he broke the all-time stolen base record that Lou Brock held. And he takes the bag and pulls it out from the ground at second base. And or it might have been third base, saying, you know, I am finally the greatest. And yes, you were. You were the greatest base stealer of all time. Ricky Henderson, rest in peace. Okay, we're going to take it on over to the Financial Coach's Corner with Brad Kreger. And Brad, the last couple of weeks we've spoken about year-end planning. And now that we're turning the chapter on the new year coming in with the new administration, what do you see happening in the first part of the year?
That's a great question. I think we're going to, predictably, everybody believes that energy prices are going to be impacted. And the tariffs that we see, or the incoming administration is talking about, I think that will impact markets. Is there any of either one of those strike your fancy you want to get into?
Wherever you want to go.
Well, why don't we stick with energy, since that's the first one. It's expected that energy prices are going to come down, which is interesting. We're going to open up some of the stuff that was put on pause by the prior administration. They'll probably revisit the pipeline. There's a lot of stuff that they may or may not do, but the one thing that people must understand is that energy prices won't be immediately impacted. It's not going to be quick. It'll take some time to redeploy different resources into energy production. But the U.S. is poised to be a major exporter in energy. We've got a lot of liquid natural gas that Europe needs, and there's a lot that could change over the next 4 years in terms of energy. I do expect energy prices to come down, but anything else you got on your mind, Ron, in terms of energy? Or
what are your thoughts about the tariffs, possibly?
Yeah, the Biden administration left many of those tariffs on in China, but a Trump administration is talking about new tariffs with different trading partners, Canada, Mexico. It really could impact Mexico. But I'm not sure if all of it is, if it's not bargaining power. Politics, if you will. I don't know. But I do know that the prediction for financial markets is that if tariffs are our future, or increased tariffs are in our future, that will impact the rest of the world. The rest of the world's economies will not be growing as fast, which would push and make the United States more of a place to invest moving forward for the next few years.
Okay, there you have it. That's our latest update on what may happen in the new year. Thanks so much for your comments, Brad, and we'll see you next time.
Take care.
Still call me the Penguin.
Okay, we are back with We'll See About That, and we are now going to be joining Phil Galdston, who will be receiving a beautiful fruit gift basket courtesy of our friends at Melissa's Produce. Melissa's is the proud partner of We'll See About That. Be sure to use my VIP code RONSAY when checking out at melissas.com, and please do check that out because they've got a menu there that will whet your appetite, I'm sure. All right, we are glad and pleased and proud to be having our guest here, Phil Galdston, who is an accomplished songwriter, producer, sold over 130 million copies globally, has worked with iconic stars in music, Celine Dion, Vanessa Williams, Beyonce, Sheryl Crow, Brandy, others, Chicago. What a treat it is to have such an accomplished songwriter and guest. Phil, welcome to the show. And what's going on in New York these days?
Well, Ron, first of all, thank you for having me. Secondly, I haven't seen you since I was booing your name from Section 10 in the mezzanine of Yankee Stadium in 1981, Game 1 of the World Series.
Okay. Yes.
Nothing personal.
No, absolutely not. I was going to ask you, I'm glad you're a baseball fan, but I was going to ask you whether you were a Yankee fan or a Met fan. And you've answered the question, I guess. If not, you'll state so.
It's a little bit more nuanced than that. I am such a Yankee fan. I grew up in a Yankee household. I married into a Yankee fan household. Whitey Ford moved into our neighborhood when I was about 12, and I have stories about that. And when our daughter got married, she married into a Mets household. So now I'm having to balance it so that two of our grandchildren don't get unhappy with me when I root for the Yankees.
Well, you know, I have a mixed version in my family as well. I have a son-in-law who's a Red Sox fan. My brother-in-law is a Yankee fan. And my other brother-in-law is a Dodger fan. So I'm glad they're all Dodger fans. I just don't envy the fact that baseball prices are going to be through the roof here pretty soon again. Oh, my God. Back in the day, you could go to a ballpark and really have a great time and buy all kinds of food and memorabilia. Today, it's a little bit different.
Very true. I used to have to decide as a child between a reserve seat for $2.50 or a box seat for $3.50, and the dollar difference meant three or four hot dogs. So I understand.
Well, I think Mike is our aficionado in music in the studio. He's got a number of questions to get started with, so I'm going to let him handle this for right now.
Okay, I appreciate that, Ronce. Phil, thank you so much for coming on. And based on your background, with these like based off of Abbey Road Studios, how did you first get into music? Well, what artist was it? And I'm guessing probably the Beatles are involved. And tell us how you started your career and became such a prolific producer and songwriter.
Thanks, Mike. Well, I apparently showed a fascination with music from a very early age. My mother used to love to tell the story of how I led the neighborhood kids in a Davy Crockett march in which I told them how to sing the song. And then my sister, who's older than I, was a deep Elvis fan. So I grew up on Sun Records from Nashville. And then she became, and my brother, it's the middle of the three of us, became gigantic folk fans. But what really captured me initially, almost all music captured me, but what really captured me in a big way was the soundtracks to musicals. And my mother used to love to tell the story that when my parents took us to our first musical, I wouldn't leave the theater until the orchestra concluded its entr'acte at the end of the evening, and that I was fascinated by what was going on there. So it obviously caught my attention in some deep way. There was a lot of music in my father's background, although neither of my parents were remotely musical. I used to tell my mother when I was 4 years old, if she asked if I wanted her to sing in a lullaby to help me sleep, I'd say no thanks, because she really didn't have the voice that pleased me. But to get to your question a little more specifically, yes, like most of my peers, what really lit the fire was the Beatles. And as somebody who, as the director of songwriting at NYU, gets to teach about such artists, such music, such a time period, I think that it's difficult now to appreciate how they lit the imagination of a whole generation. But they did. The fact is, they did.
And they did it twice, really. I mean, they did it when they first came over, you know, in the kind of the mop hop and the suits phase, and then in the psychedelic phase, they just, it's, you know, to go on that roller coaster with that act. I can't think of an act that could have fans that were like 9 years old through 49 years old when they through their career.
Yes, I agree. You know, one of my mentors was the late great producer Arif Martin. And Arif, who produced everybody from Aretha to Streisand to Bette Midler to Average White Band, you know, on and on. Great. Arif used to explain the impact or the influence of musical artists in this way. We'll see that if you drew an arc, you would have time going vertically and the arc of a career hopefully going up. And that it was the rare musical artist who could move history with the arc of their career, actually take it, change its course. And yes, there have been others who did that. I think Michael Jackson did that. I think Stevie Wonder definitely did that before the Beatles and during the Beatle time. Dylan, to a degree. Louis Armstrong, definitely. You know, there have been a handful of people. But because the baby boom was so large and the cultural impact, not to mention the commercial impact, was so great, I think it was really earth-shaking in a way that it's difficult to appreciate now, but your observation is dead on for me.
What's the first instrument you picked up?
Well, when our family moved to the suburbs, my parents decided that our Steinway upright grand piano, which is a beast of an instrument, but an upright, that the only room for it was my brother's and my bedroom. And so while my brother and sister were taking piano lessons, I was just fooling around at the piano. And then one day my mother came in and put a keyboard chart in front of the keyboard that told me which notes on the page correspond to which notes on the keyboard. And pretty soon, my brother and sister's piano player, a piano teacher who would visit our home to give them lessons, said to me, your mother tells me that you can play your brothers and sisters' pieces. Is that true? And I said, yes. And she said, play one for me. So I sat down in the key of F I played long, long ago, which was a piano staple at the time. And when I was done, she said, well, that's quite good. Do you know what these little numbers over the notes mean? And I said, I wasn't really reading the notes, by the way. I was just doing it by ear. But I said, no, I don't. She said, well, those notes correspond to the fingers you should use to play that note on the piano. I'll be back next week to teach your brother and sister. If you can play that same piece with the correct fingers, I'll teach you. If you can't, I won't. Well, I could care less about that. So when she came back, I couldn't. And I went on about my way, and so did she. So I just started playing piano. It was in my room. I had fun playing it. I started figuring out songs. I had a couple of friends who knew more than I did.
Hold on, but, Phil, we're going to a break right now. We want to keep this up right after the break. Stay with us. This is amazing. This is a treat, you guys. Stick around the one, so we'll see about that.
Do you want to add a boost to your sex life this weekend? Do you want to make your partner and yourself happy? Then call our special hotline now. We'll sell you those little pills that work below the belt for less than $1 a pill and deliver your package in a few days, just in time for the weekend. Our pill delivers almost the same results as expensive pills for less than a dollar a piece, and you don't need a prescription. And ask about their buy three, get three free offer. What are you waiting for? Boost your sex life and have a great time now. Less than a dollar a pill, discreet delivery in a few days, and a buy three, get three free offer? Dial this number and save it now.
800-229-8627. 800-229-8627. 800-229-8627. That's 800-229-8627. Paid for by the pharmacy shop.
Everyone watches more than 5 hours of television. Really? And that's not counting mobile viewing. Get Dish TV and make that time worth it. With Dish, you can get hundreds of channels, access to all kinds of sports, tons of movies, premium channels, and more. Another thing that's really cool with Dish is you can watch most of your favorite shows on your mobile device anywhere for a lot less than cable. Yes, that's right. We are asking you to watch more TV and not less TV, but make it better television with Dish this time, anytime, anywhere. So call right now and learn how easy it is to save on your television bill and get the most out of your TV viewing experience. Dial that number and I promise you we're here waiting for your call because we want to save you money and give you better television. We are Dish TV.
800-293-0328. 800-293-0328. 800-293-0328. That's 800-293-0328.
If you're struggling to keep up with conversations, avoiding restaurants because you can't understand the waiter, if you've got the TV volume way up, then you really need these. These tiny but powerful little hearing aids are the Nano CIC rechargeable, priced at only $297 for a full pair. And no, these are not simply amplifiers. These are ultra high quality, ultra reliable hearing aids, priced thousands less than other hearing aids. They fit right in your ear. Nothing shows on the back of your ear. And at only $297 for a full pair. When you order today, Nano will give you a 45-day money-back guarantee. Order right now and Nano will give you a free portable charging case and even ship them to you for free. Here's the number. Call now.
800-278-1738. 800-278-1738. 800-278-1738. That's 800-278-1738.
Hello, Ron Save. Okay, and we are back after the break with Phil Galdston, and we are going to let Phil continue on.
Well, thanks, Ron. I don't have to bore everybody with every detail of...
You're not boring me. This is fascinating.
Suffice it to say that trumpet was my next instrument, and the great thing about playing trumpet and later baritone horn was that I was able to secure ensemble experience. And my experience doing that taught me, A, the significance of ensemble experience, as in playing with others, as in there's no I in team. And I've always said since that in a world of pop music where it's increasingly possible to create music in your bedroom on your laptop, I can always spot a musician, a student, et cetera, who has ensemble experience and one who doesn't, because there's just a different way of thinking about it. And I considered it one of the most important elements of my career, excuse me. So from there, it was a folk group I was in junior high and then a rock band in the beginning of high school. And that rock band became very popular in my hometown. And then we got a record deal of all things. That's a long, crazy story, but we got a record deal with Epic Records, part of what's now Sony. And nobody ever heard our single, but we did get to make a single. We actually got to cut an album, which was never released. But so by the time I got to, that was all in high school. By the time I got to college, I was dividing my time between the upstate campus of the school I went to and Manhattan, where I was down here. I was pretty much splitting it 3 days a week in each place with a day total of travel. And I was fortunate enough to make a number of contacts during that period. I would say, looking back, that that was the period you might describe in my life where I was considered kind of precocious. Oh, he can write, he can lead a band, he can arrange. It was a jazz rock band. But, you know, being precocious only takes you so far, because pretty soon you're not precocious anymore. And you're playing with the big boys and girls and others, and you have to prove it every day. So that was an interesting road, but it was a continuous road. I recently had a student interview me for a paper, and she asked me a question I have to admit I never gave much thought to, which was, she asked, did you ever think of doing out? Actually, she asked, what else did you think of doing after college? And I had to think for a while, and I said, nothing. This was it. Did I know what it meant? No. Did I even understand really how you make money at it, support a family, et cetera? No. But it was the passion that drove me, like most people. You know, John Lennon said that if he hadn't been successful, he might have been a criminal. He just wasn't sure what would have happened to him. I wouldn't say that about me, but I'd say I have no idea what else I would have done. It's not like I don't have other interests. It's just I don't have the same passion for anything else.
Well, that's many people at that age, myself included, Phil, had the same thoughts. Yeah, this is it for me. You know, I'm going to be the next rock star. And you actually made it happen with your success. So you had the base of piano, of a corded instrument. Then you went to play horn, which is a cordless instrument. And you talked about how those two things really helped you. I imagine the space and the ensemble and the cordless performances probably really helped. You have success with a band in high school. You guys get a deal. You go to the studio, cut the record. First time in the studio, how did that feel? Because, you know, for the rest of your career, you're going to have a tremendous success in the studio.
Well, the studio was the most thrilling place in the world to me. I always loved playing live. Excuse me. I always loved playing live, but the studio utterly inspired me. And before I got in a recording studio, I'd spent a lot of time imagining what it was like in a studio. And I did that by taking my family's hi-fi speakers, KLH, if you know that, and my parents let me stretch the cables out, put them on the floor, and then I sat there with my head between the speakers, and I would move the balance switch, the balance pot, around so I could hear what was going on one side and the other. And in those days, due to the nature of technology, you could actually hear more discrete elements that way. And so by the time I got in the studio, I felt I understood many parts of it. Now I had a lot to learn, but it was totally thrilling. I mean, I never wanted to leave the studio, and I still don't. But, you know, you put your finger on something really interesting, Mike, there, that when I talk about ensemble experience, that's one element. But you also mentioned the difference, not to get too technical, but the difference between the harmonic approach, which is what you get with a corded instrument, as you called it, and the linear element, which is what you get with a single sound instrument, like I play trumpet. So with trumpet, you're hearing and you're playing melody, and you're playing it in relation to harmony. And it's that marriage in the musical elements of songwriting or any musical composition that is so crucial. And it's also one that when you get experience at this, you can distinguish between those who can really hear both and those who can't. Now, there are plenty of people who are really successful who are not harmonically sophisticated. Bruce Springsteen is not harmonically sophisticated, but that doesn't mean he can't write great songs. It's just, it's a different approach.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, absolutely. I mean, listen to, you know, Chet Baker, Birth of the Cool, where there's no corded instruments. It's all linear. It's all harmony. It's a really, really sets a mood. Let's, you know, talk a little bit about here about the similarities between you two, Ron and Phil, your careers. You know, you're a professional athlete, Ron, World Series champion, MVP of the World Series. We have Phil, superstar producer of pop records, over 130 million sold. What are some of the similarities between professional music creation and pro sports? And Ron, I'd like to start with you.
Well, I think I should take and ask Phil to start this off, because I want to see what he's got so I can feed off of that, because I need to listen to where he I want to feed off of Phil. So, Phil, please be my guest and take the lead.
Thank you, Ron. First, I'll say that my second passion growing up was baseball, and I played it constantly. Living in New York, where the weather would be dark and cold and snowy for months at a time, I was always agitating with my gym coach, when can we go outside and play ball? When can we go outside and play ball? So when I began to enjoy the ensemble experience, both as a player, as a composer, and as a listener, what I found I loved was the teamwork. And so, for example, and Mike will understand this very well, I was invited to be first chair trumpet player, but I didn't really want to be first chair trumpet player. I wanted to be second or third because I liked the internal parts. So that's like being the catcher. You're at the center of things, but you're not necessarily the one who's most visible. You're involved with most plays, or all plays, at least at the beginning, and you're integral, but you're not necessarily the person who starts the play, who makes the flashy play. And I'll say, Ron, that I've always noted for particularly young people who start off thinking they want to be stars as musicians and songwriters, that there's so much to love, enjoy, and find fulfilling in being at the center of the action as a team member. And that's why so many great record producers are drummers or bassists. And that's why so many great baseball managers are catchers. That's my take.
Well, I do draw a similarity. You know, baseball, you know, I can see where you decided where you fit in. And that's like playing baseball. You go out there and when you're young, you're playing every position, most likely. And yeah, everybody wants to pitch and be the best player and play shortstop and bat fourth. But you know what? Sometimes you're not. And I experienced all of that, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, I couldn't make a living pitching, you know, but I could playing third base. And right. Yeah, there's a lot of action. I'm one of those players. But through process of elimination, I knew where I best set in and where I could best fulfill my part in this teamwork, because you need everybody to perform at the level that they do to make this thing a singular success. And really tremendously to that. And I also wanted to go back to the time where you said you were unsure about what you wanted to do. And I was single-minded at the time, too. I wanted to have a baseball career. And I was once asked by a lady in New York who was doing this interview with me, and says, you know, you're an overnight star. What would you have done if you hadn't played baseball? And I said, I would have played baseball.
I like
that was the end of the line.
Part.
Yeah.
Well, I like the overnight star part is the part I really like.
Well, it's like Cortez burning his ships when he came to the New World. It's you kind of have to have that mentality where it's all or nothing. And that creates the drive. And the drive is something I want to probe in this next segment, because there's, I think, a commonality between, you know, people who've had tremendous success both in entertainment and music, as Phil has and Ron has in sports, where drive is such a huge component of that. And I want to talk about that right after the break, because okay. This is a good time we're having here. Stick around, you guys. All right. We'll see about that. The great Ron Say, Phil Gadsden, superstar producer and songwriter of rock and pop records. Stay with us.
December deals just dropped at Lowe's. Get up to 30% off select major appliances. Plus, take an additional $75 off every $1,000 you spend on select kitchen major appliances from Whirlpool, KitchenAid, Amana, and Maytag. Also, save $20 on a Craftsman VersaStack rolling tool chest. Now just $69.98. Lowe's knows deals. Valid 12/12 through 12/18. Cannot be combined with additional discounts. See Lowe's.com for details and qualifying items while supplies last.
The season of savings is here at Office Depot Office Max. Shop amazing deals on everything you need to close out the year and start 2025 strong. Save now with new deals every day online and new weekly sales online and in stores every Sunday. The more deals, the merrier. Plus, save on those must-have gifts, essential supplies, organizational tools, desks, chairs, PCs, printers, and more. Add a personal touch to any present with Hallmark's iconic collection of greeting cards, ornaments, stationery, and gift wrap to create memorable moments. Available in your local Office Depot Office Max retail stores. Or create your own custom photo gifts, cards, and calendars for your teachers, coworkers, friends, and family. Then pack it and ship it all in one trip. Office Depot Office Max is your source for all the last-minute parties, presents, and thank yous you need. Tis the season to save. Sponsored by Office Depot Office Max.
Getting together with friends to watch the game? Then you'll need American Premium Vodka. Handcrafted and pure, this is the one thing all Americans can agree on. Founder Mark Gus Scott chose the finest natural elements America has to offer, and you'll taste how great it is to be an American. Now available at BevMo, GoPuff, Hy-Vee, and Fairway stores. American Premium Vodka. This is the America we need right now. Go to AmericanPremiumVodka.com. Celebrate responsibly.
The Columbia Interchange System was revolutionary when it was designed over 40 years ago, and it's still breaking ground to this day. Featuring 3-in-1 jackets that adapt to fluctuating weather patterns to keep you warm, dry, and protected no matter what. Whatever the weather, Interchange is there. Shop Interchange jackets and more at Columbia.com.
Ah. Ah, the holidays. A time to come together and reflect on what truly matters.
The KFC Festive Feast for $25.99.
Feel the joy
of 6 original recipe tenders and 6 pieces of hand-breaded chicken.
Family and friends celebrating.
2 large sides and 3 sauces.
The warmth of
11 herbs and spices.
Love. I was going to say love.
And KFC.
Okay. The KFC Festive Feast. Order ahead on the app and feast for just $25.99. Prices and participation may vary. Tax, tip, and fees extra. Online ordering available at participating locations.
The fans are rooting for the Dodgers. The Dodgers of old L.A.
And we are back. We'll see about that. This week in Dodger history, presented by BFF Financial, 1973, the Dodgers trade all-star outfielder Willie Davis to Montreal for closer Mike Marshall, the 33-year-old reliever. Will finish over half his new team's games next season, winning the Cy Young. Once again, this is This Week in Dodger History, presented by BFF Financial. Phil, I mean, I'm just having such a great time on this. And we're talking about drive and competitiveness and, you know, motivation. I mean, Ron and I were talking before the show, is one of the reasons that I spent so much time in the woodshed learning the guitar is that I was an introvert but liked being the center of attention. And when you're sitting in a circle, you know, with a bunch of girls and you're playing songs that they know on the radio, that's a really good way to meet girls. To actually reach the next level, to make this your career, talk about drive, both of you guys, about how that affected your careers.
Well, Ron, I'm interested to see how this worked for you.
Well, I had, it's hard to explain, but I had a childhood dream that started probably about 8 or 9. I wanted to be, you know, a Major League Baseball player. My favorite player growing up was Willie Mays. And I got an opportunity to see him play when I was 12 years old that made me solidify that choice and come forward with it, because I was, you know, I really like all these players, but I don't have a favorite one. And I was kind of lying to myself. And after that, I've saying, you know what, Willie Mays is my guy. It went straight forward from that, got a chance to play against him. He was our all-star guest in the one of the all-star games. I had a personal relationship with him, and couldn't be prouder of it. But yeah, as I stated earlier, I was going to play baseball. I had the Vietnam War staring me in the face, but I was able to maneuver around that by going to school and then eventually entering the military. As a reservist, so I could serve my country and play baseball. But I spent my time playing baseball like you spent your time doing your music stuff, you know, practicing, playing, writing, whatever it was. I was dedicated to find a way to make it happen.
Mm. I think, Mike, that I think Ron's and my stories are probably quite similar. It's difficult to explain to someone who doesn't have this kind of passion, and I'm not dissing anybody who doesn't, what that kind of fire inside is. The thing about music is that it's an utterly human activity. There's no other species on earth that sings and puts words to it. So that's a major deal. One time, my wife and I were with our closest friends on the Colorado River, just above the Grand Canyon, and we stopped. We were on a guided tour, and we stopped opposite some wall paintings from the year 1100. And the guide was going on about it, and my wife looked at me and said, "What are you thinking?" And I said, "Well, I'm thinking that it's remarkable that these paintings are here, but I'm wondering just what kind of song they were singing while they were painting, because you know they were. That's the way music works for people." The difference between, and I'm interested to have Rod comment on this, but the difference between people who strive to make a living at it, and remember I said strive, and those who don't, or those who persist and hopefully eventually succeed, and those who give up, is that, and there's something I tell my students all the time, if you don't get up every day needing to do this, I suggest you not try to do it as a way of life. It's just so difficult to do. And the last thing you want to do is kill your love of music. It's like I've met so many former professional athletes or college athletes who have become totally turned off to the sport they once loved because they didn't succeed at it. And that to me is so sad. And you don't, it doesn't have to be that way in music. But if you have the drive to do it, then the need is so great, you get up wanting to do it. But I just want to link that to something I said earlier. And that is, I said, there's, you know, the old expression, there's no I in team. The point of that and the point of ensemble experience is the humility to understand that it takes a group of people to pull this off. And I can turn to the man on this program who hit 316 home runs and batted in over 1,100 runs and say, wow, what an incredible statistic. But I think we all know that he couldn't do that alone.
No, and I will sum up what you wanted to hear as far as my drive and motivation. I must have been 9 years old. I had a Saturday morning game at the Boys Club on the number one field, 10 o'clock in the morning, and my first and only epiphany. And I walked to the plate, my first at bat, and I'm saying, God, wouldn't this be great if I could play this game every single day? And it happened. And I'm sure that that probably happens the same way for you. Yeah, it's
absolutely
there. Every day it's there. I want to play baseball every day. I want to go out there and perform every day. It's live. It's not rehearsed. We have a new game every day. But it was the challenge of being able to do it physically and emotionally and to be able to perform at a high level. And that was my beckoning call.
Well, that's a really interesting point right there. A number of really interesting points. So the first one is, I once had a very important music executive ask me, well, let me frame it this way. It's a very important music executive who had been a songwriter and a recording artist and who, in fact, I had produced. I had discovered him and produced him. That's a whole other story. So now he had become a big executive. And he invited me down to a studio where he was overseeing the production of a major soundtrack. And he said, come outside in the lounge, let's talk. And he turned to me and said, I want to know how you can keep doing this. And I turned to him, I said, what are you talking about? How can I keep doing this? He said, I said, you're still making music. He said, yeah, but I'm not doing it like you're doing it. I'm overseeing things. You're in the trenches, writing it, recording it, producing it, et cetera. How can you do it? I said, what do you think is the challenge? He said, how can you stand the rejection? Now, that's like asking a batter, how can you stand failing two-thirds of the times? Right?
And more.
And
yeah.
I said, well, I don't think of it that way. I don't think of it as how can I stand the rejection. I think of it as this is what I love to do. And rejection is part of it, but it's not part of the writing or the performing. It's the end part of it. Hopefully it's not, but more often than not, it is. So that to me links to the drive you're talking about.
Well, I understand that well. Yeah, failure is part of what we go through. The will to succeed. Did it for 20 years professionally.
Yeah.
And all the years that led up to it and afterwards, it's just what I wanted to do. And you know what? Back in the time that I started playing baseball, it wasn't about the millions of dollars that players are being paid today. And that was key for me. The love of the game. This is something I really enjoy doing, and I made the effort and I was able to succeed. And if I can do it, a lot of people can do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Phil, we're running short on time, which makes me absolutely disconsolate. So I want to set the stage here. It's 1992. I'm sitting in the back of my mom's 1983 Honda Accord, and she is singing at the top of her lungs, Save the Best for Last by Vanessa Williams on cassette. How did you become, you know, such a prolific songwriter? Did the artists reach out to you? Was the labels reach out, managers? How's that work?
Well, first of all, it happens if you're fortunate enough to have the opportunity. It happens every which way you can imagine. I always joke that I'm the most promiscuous songwriter who ever lived because I've done it every way with everybody in every way you can. And what happened in that situation was really at the time for me and for my collaborators, John Lind and Wendy Waldman, it was pretty unusual. So I'll tell the story very simply, if I can. John and I were working on another song, desperately trying to finish another song we were sure was a hit for somebody. And we were in a small apartment we'd borrowed from a friend in LA, writing on a dinky little keyboard, and we took a break from what we were working on. And I happened to play that opening theme. Just my hands just played it. I don't know where, how, why. And John started singing. And we worked on this music. I have a recording of this for 27 minutes. And we wrote almost all of the music to that song in those 27 minutes. Later on, I added a couple little parts. But when I was when we were shutting down for the night, John said, you know, we're working on this other song. You should try to finish that lyric with somebody else. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, what do you think this thing is called we just fooled around with? And I said, I don't know. And I looked in my title book and I said, oh, here's something that fits, Save the Best for Last. And he said, well, I like that. And we sang a little bit. Then he said, you should really finish the lyric with somebody else. And I said, like who? And he said, well, you always say how much you love writing with Wendy Waldman. So why not with Wendy? Well, we were in LA. I lived in New York. Wendy lived in Nashville. Eventually, Wendy and I got together. She was 9 months pregnant. Anyway, the best part of the writing story is that when I showed Wendy the music, she loved it. And she asked me what I meant by the title, Save the Best for Last. And I said, well, I think of it as bittersweet. She said, what do you mean? I think it means that you hurt me at the end and save the best for last, kind of, you know, ironic, tragic. And she looked at me in the way that only Wendy can, and she said, you're out of your mind. She actually said, you're out of your effing mind. And I said, what do you mean? She said, it's not about that. And I said, what's it about? She said, just when I didn't think you loved me, you love me. And I said, oh, you mean a Moon in June song? And that's how we came up with those first two lines.
Wow.
So we made a little demo, then we made a more sophisticated demo. I didn't think it was a hit song. Wendy didn't think it was a hit song. John thought it was a hit song. Eventually, Wendy's publisher played it for the son of Billy Eckstine, Ed Eckstine, a great record executive who started his career working for Quincy Jones. And Ed loved the song. And Ed played it for Vanessa. And she was starting her second album. And when Ed played it for her, she burst into tears and said, you mean they're willing to give me this song? And so, you know, everything about it, I could go on. Everything about that was just the right moments, the right people, the great producer, Keith Thomas, being hired by Ed to produce it. And, you know, it just worked. But well, that's an example of how it happens, you know? There are a lot of different factors.
Yeah, like you said, I mean, it comes in a million different ways, you know, songs off the shelf, songs presented for the artist, collaborations like that. I'm so sad. I'm actually weeping that we're out of time. Phil, will you promise to come back? Because we got to talk about, you know, your music supervision on Miami Vice. We got to talk about working with Chicago, working with the Wilsons. This has just been an absolute delight.
And your work with NYU and how that's been going and what the plans are in the future. We left so much on the table. I would really love to have you back, you know, maybe in the next couple of months soon to finish
but
this
on,
up.
On one condition, Ron.
What's that?
I get to ask you many more baseball questions.
You can ask as many questions as you want, Phil. I'll be happy to oblige you.
Fantastic.
All right, there we have it. Phil Galdston, what a treat to have you on, Phil. Have a great holidays. We're going to get you back after the first of the year.
Thanks, and thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
All right, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. What a treat. We'll be right back after this message. We'll see about that.
Thank you. Looking for a cruise vacation? Cruise.com is offering its exclusive sale of the year to all listeners to this station. Every major cruise line, including Royal Caribbean, Carnival, Princess, MSC, and more, are on sale now. Call 1-800-430-7924 and book one of these deals while supplies last. Cruises start from as low as $39 per person per day. There isn't a better vacation value to places like Alaska, Europe, the Caribbean, South America, and more. Call one of the largest cruise specialists in the world at 1-800-430-7924. We'll find you a vacation that includes drinks, Wi-Fi, excursions, and more. Call 1-800-430-7924. Again, that's 1-800-430-7924. Space is limited. Don't miss your opportunity to book the best deal of the year. That's 1-800-430-7924. Sponsored by Cruise.com.
Do you have Medicare and do you use a CPAP machine? This is a national healthcare alert regarding your CPAP supplies. Using a clean CPAP mask and clean supplies is important to staying healthy. The best way to make sure your CPAP equipment is clean is to get new supplies. If you have Medicare, we have great news. Medicare will pay for you to have new clean supplies every 90 days. We'll even do all the paperwork for you to make sure that there's little to no out-of-pocket cost to you. And you don't even have to leave your home. We provide free in-home delivery. So if you're a CPAP user and you have Medicare, staying healthy with new CPAP equipment is easy. Just make this free phone call right now to get started.
Sponsored by Specialty Medical. 800-913-9739. 800-913-9739. 800-913-9739. That's 800-913-9739.
Has someone in your family lost a job recently and now you can't afford your mortgage payment? Or do you have a rental property and your tenants aren't paying you? Quick Cash Offer can come to the rescue and pay you cash for your home immediately. Yes, sell your home and get cash all over the phone without dealing with real estate agents and risking your safety by showing your home to lukewarm buyers. You don't need to lose your home to foreclosure. If you have any equity in your home, we will buy it and give you cash within days, all in a simple over-the-phone and virtual process. Call Quick Cash Offer now, before the economy gets worse. Sell a home you can't afford or just don't want to get the cash you need today.
800-788-1495. 800-788-1495. 800-788-1495. That's 800-788-1495.
Hey, Ron. How you doing?
Okay, we're about ready to wrap things up here on We'll See About That for this week. And just wanted to go back to this day in Dodger history for a second. The trade for Willie Davis and Mike Marshall. Willie Davis, to this day, is still the fastest human I've seen on a baseball field. And there's been a lot of fast ones. I'm sure that there are challengers, but Willie Davis will go down as my number one guy. And it turned out to be a great trade for us because Mike Marshall went on to pitch over 100 games that season, win the Cy Young, and help us get back to the World Series against the Oakland A's. So
yeah, speaking of World Series, 1981, we had our special guest Phil Gladstone talk about how he was booing you from the from the boxes there.
I'm so happy he did.
Yeah. what a great guest! What an amazing life!
Awesome.
I mean, like you said, we didn't even scratch the surface. We even talk about him working with Beyonce and working with so many huge acts that have sold millions and millions of records. Yeah. His writing partner as well wrote a lot for Madonna. So we definitely got to have him back.
Yeah, no kidding. And I would like to do that in the next month or two. Just want to remind you to visit my website, theronsayshow.com. Penguin Power, the book is over there with multiple signing options, so please take a look at that along with the other memorabilia that's over there. And also remember, we have a list of our podcast and our guests, and it's accessible from the website. And
we got a big one next week, too.
Yeah, and we do. We have a guy that I've been wanting to have on for actually over a year and was able to see him here recently and was able to make that contact. We're going to have Edward James Olmos on next week. So please tune in for that special guest appearance.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. Real fast, how was your Thanksgiving? We never talked about that.
Thanksgiving was good. It was quiet. Had the kids in. My grandkids are coming down from Northern California the following weekend. So I'm going to have a house full for a while. But all good. And, you know, hey, it's about time to do some Christmas shopping. So visit the sites. Go do your due diligence. And what about you? Are you going to – you got a lot of things to get done?
Well, I'm going to order a lot of Penguin Power off your website, theronsayshow.com, and give those out as gifts around Christmas time because it makes a fantastic gift, folks.
I would think that there's probably a few baseball/Dodger fans who might be interested in that.
I think so.
We'll wait and see.
We'll see about that.
Yeah, we will see about that. And so we're going to wrap it up this week. I want you guys to have a wonderful weekend. Glad to have you back. We'll see you next weekend.